and welcome back to Kvikmyndapod, an Icelandic cinema podcast. I'm Rob Watts, and as ever, I'm joined by my good friend Ellie Cawthorn for another journey through the landscape of 21st century Icelandic cinema. Don't forget to join us on social media. We are Kvikmyndapod, that's Kvikmyndapod, on Instagram, X, Threads, and Discord. And we can now be heard on YouTube, as well as wherever else you get your podcasts. This week's film is available right now, on Netflix, in the English language. It's called Northern Comfort, stars a handful of British actors, a couple of Icelandic actors, and is directed by Hafstein Gunnar Sigurdsson, an Icelander. This is a comedy about a group of aerophobics who attempt to overcome their fear of flying by taking a course that puts them on a flight to Iceland, where they get stuck and just generally have a strange old time. I've been waiting for this to arrive in the UK for a while, and it's exciting to see a film made by Icelanders on Netflix. Iceland has been pretty badly served by the streaming service in general. In fact, I'm pretty sure there's only one Icelandic language film on there in the UK. Anyway, to find out what Ellie and I thought of Northern Comfort, listen on.
Say hello, fearless flyers!
Good life.
This is the most important exercise. It's not the destination, but the flight that matters.
Have booked us on a flight to Iceland. Exotic, right?
That lump of volcanic rock in the North Atlantic.
David, come back. You're a fearless flyer.
Once we reach the destination, we'll wait there for a couple of hours, and then we'll pop back in.
I'm not afraid of flying.
What on earth are you doing here, then?
It's Alphonse. He was so afraid he refused to sign up unless I came with him.
Coco. What the fuck?
Dear guests, it is now time for the safety demonstration.
All it takes is one little bird to get sucked into the engine of an aircraft.
I just survived the most terrifying flight of my life.
Our flight has been delayed 9 hours.
Apparently, there was a partial breakdown in one of the engines.
They've arranged a wellness hotel for us to gather ourselves and prepare for this evening.
To take that flight tonight would be nothing less than suicide.
No matter what the others decide, okay, we're taking that flight tonight.
If you want to fly, spread your wings.
I have never felt so alive.
Ah! I want to go home.
In the middle of fucking nowhere.
A little bit foggy in London, so...
Oh, yes, there's definitely something foggy going on here.
Hello again, Ellie.
Hello.
How's it going?
Good. We've had some Haribos. Other sweets are available. And some tinnies of Weiss beer. So we're good to go.
I know. This is a rare treat. You come bringing snacks and treats. Like
I know. I just thought before I got here, I simply must have... treats. So here I am.
Well, if you can hear it in our voices, we're very sorry, but we're not actually that sorry. So this week is a film on Netflix.
Yeah, I thought this was an Icelandic cinema podcast, Rob, but this we're speaking about an English language film. What's happening?
I know. Well, let me tell you, the director is Icelandic.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember way back in series one?
Probably not, but try me.
Under the Tree?
Yeah, oh, I remember Under the Tree, of course.
It's one of the best. Mm. This is Hafstein Gunnar Sigurdsson's English language film debut. So he did Under the Tree a while back. Mm. He's since done the Icelandic TV series After Elding, which I've spoken about multiple times. Yeah, and now he got funding to make an English language film with a variety of people in it.
And half set in Iceland, to be fair.
Yes. So I guess there is Icelandic funding in there. And it's called Northern Comfort.
Mm.
Normally, I would say there's an Icelandic title, but...
There isn't.
There's not one, no?
To be fair, Northern Comfort to me is a very appealing title.
Is it?
Yeah, because I'm Northern. And comfort, it sounds also kind of like a whiskey or something that's going to envelop you in warmth. And coziness, and there's probably not the relaxing vibe that we get.
Not at all, no. And it's funny you say that, because I was thinking about, there's a TV series similar to Twin Peaks called Northern Exposure, which mm-hmm. is very off beaten off kilter, and I thought this film might be a bit like that. It's not like that either. Although it is a bit offbeat,
I was going to say, in a different kind of way. It kind of has the Icelandic sensibility to it. Would you agree?
Yes. I mean, that makes sense because it was written by the director and his usual partners, Halldór Laxness Halldórsson and Tobias Munther. So it kind of it makes sense that they had the same input, the same humour. But I feel it was slightly less successful. I'm going to say at the top of the podcast that this wasn't quite as successful as Under the Tree.
Why do you think so?
I don't know that. I don't think it's the Icelandic sensibility, because we found that funny multiple times throughout this podcast. I just think it's just not quite balanced enough.
Yeah. I feel almost like it's a really great kernel of a premise.
Yeah.
And you see when we watch the trailer, you know, this idea of a group of people who are afraid of flying, they get sent on a expedition, that's probably too dramatic a word, but on an experience to learn how to fly without being afraid.
That's it.
It's a great premise for kind of like one of these old school British comedies about eccentric characters. But yeah, there is something about it that can't quite sustain the runtime. It would have been a great Inside Number 9 half-hour episode.
Well, that's a good shout. Yeah, it would have made a nice Rhys Shearsmith, Steve Pemberton 30 minutes. I think it's a little bit, it doesn't quite know where to focus. So it's kind of a comedy. It's kind of trying to be a drama about these people overcoming fears. But it never really, and sorry to say this, lands anywhere.
I thought you were going to say never really takes off, which also would have worked.
Yeah, either or. All the flight puns you can imagine. If you can think of any more as we go, please pepper them through. And yeah, I mean, you gave us the synopsis. So this diverse group of characters, they're just not that interesting.
Oh, see, I think I felt more warmly towards this film than you from, you know, I had no idea how you felt about it till we turned the microphones on. But I didn't dislike this film in any way. I just was waiting for it to kind of kick into a next gear that would really deliver. And it didn't quite do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I know what you mean. Maybe some of the characters, for example, the influencer.
Yeah.
Felt quite, slightly a tired cliche at this point.
Yeah, it's funny because I thought that she did quite a good job of being that.
Yeah,
character.
Yeah, yeah. No, the actress was good. Just this idea of an influencer that drags her boyfriend around to make content across the world and make content and is very vacuous does feel like something that's now become a kind of cultural trope. And I was hoping that there was going to be a bit more to it than that, or she was going to not quite be the character that you expect there in that trope, but she just was.
Yeah, she's very straightforward influencer, boyfriend take photos of me, nothing really more to it. She doesn't have a fear to overcome. She is just there as kind of the
to force her boyfriend to go so that he comes and makes content for her.
The catalyst for his experience. So that's Coco. She's played by Ella Rumpf, who, have you ever seen the horror movie Raw?
No, honestly, for years I've been trying to see this film.
It's amazing.
Where is it streamed?
I don't know. It was on Netflix at one point. I've got it on Blu-ray. I know you don't have a Blu-ray player. But
I don't have a Blu-ray player, Rob. Who do you think I am?
I think you should get with the times, but also it's probably not the times anymore particularly either. But it would help you watch a lot of films that I have available. Mm. But she's amazing in that as the main character's sister, I think. It's a great scene with a finger. But I won't give any more away than that. And she is obviously the partner of Alphonse, who's the guy who's scared of flying. I don't know where he's meant to be. Is he meant to be Portuguese or Spanish?
I don't know. I thought that they were maybe Icelandic. But then they didn't say, oh yeah, Iceland, our home.
No, exactly.
They were non-specifically European. Continental Europe.
Yeah, because he, Alphonse, he's played by a Swedish actor, Sverre Gudnason, who I don't know if you've seen his. I'm just going to keep mentioning people's films throughout this, because there's actually a cast of people we can recognise from other stuff. So Sverre Gudnason, he was in Borg McEnroe. Did you ever see that film?
Yes. Was he Borg?
He was Borg.
Oh my God. I didn't recognise him at all from that.
Neither did I. Very, very different look.
Yes. Well, can we talk about this, please? I know we're kind of jumping around all over the place, but this is top of my priority list for discussion. When he takes his hat off and he's bald underneath.
Yeah.
Sorry, what? Why does he What?
I know,
why
he's quite
shocked.
Why
doesn't he shave his head? He looks like a monk.
For that reveal. Purely terrible. For the reveal.
And clearly it's a horrible bald cap, but I hated it.
I mean, he is supposed to be a bit of a geek.
Yeah, but do you really think that the influencer would be dating that man with the big bald monk hair?
Maybe he's never taken the hat off. I know people who wear caps and hats inside all the time.
I think at that point, just shave your head.
It would make way more sense. Mm. Yeah, very odd. What do you make of their relationship then while we're on them? Because he obviously, yes, he's a good photographer. And yes, she's very attractive. And that's a good sort of working relationship. Mm. But do they really feel like they're a good couple?
I think it's a slightly Dracula and Renfield situation.
Ooh.
So maybe when they first got together, he's infatuated with her. So he'll do anything. Fly across the globe when he's afraid to make content of her and all of this. And then she was like, well, this is going to work to my advantage. Great. I don't think that there's a real romantic spark there, is there?
No, and we'll come to it, but she's obviously interested in other people.
Mm.
We'll say that. So there's those two. And then we've got Sarah, who's, I guess, our lead for the film.
Yeah.
Played by Lydia Leonard.
Now, who I love generally off of the telly.
Yeah, off of like TV dramas
generally.
She's in The Crown.
I don't think I got this far in The Crown.
Well, I never saw it. I mean, this is just a Google, but she played Cherie Blair.
I can see that. I can kind of see that.
Yeah, like taking these real life people and casting them as more attractive.
I have some memory of her in period dramas playing like Virginia Woolf or someone.
Yeah, that sounds right too. But I don't know. But she's very recognisable.
She's very recognisable, and I think she's a solid performance, which made me really think of, you know, the sister in Fleabag who gets terrible haircut.
Had that exact thought, yeah.
I wonder if she was unavailable. but it was very much that kind of high-functioning, high-anxiety business boss bitch character.
With a fatal flaw.
With a fatal flaw. Well, also cripplingly stressed and anxious. Is that the fatal flaw or just that she can't fly?
Well, the fatal flaw that she can't, she's afraid of flying.
Mm.
But is that, that seems to be the only thing she's actually cripplingly afraid of. She seems pretty good at her job.
Quite on edge though, generally, doesn't she?
But I think all of that stems from the flight. I don't think anything in this film is used for any other reason than to sort of advance the fear of flying plot and theme. Like, we see her on edge at the start purely because she's got two flights lined up. She's been lying to her partner about flying and all of that. And then at the airport, in like, there are some really funny scenes. Mm. And one of them that made me laugh was just after they finally land in Iceland, after this experience flight that gets delayed and takes 3 hours long rather than the 1 or 2 hours they were expecting, she goes to change her shirt in the toilet because Coco's been sick all over it. And she jumps at the
hand dryer.
At the hand dryer just turning on. And it was that just a little moment like that, I thought was a nice touch because I hadn't really been laughing up to that point.
I also enjoyed the touch in that scene of the top that she's lent by the influencer. It's just like one that she would never be seen dead in, but has to wear for the rest of the film.
Yeah, with the drop shoulder.
Yeah.
That's a great look.
Yeah, I thought there were some great little moments in it. One thing I wanted to know, are there really these companies that will guide you through being like getting over a fear of flying? I bet there are.
Yeah, there must be. There must be, because the director has been on his kind of press rounds talking about how the film was influenced by a family member who couldn't face flying and, yeah, was sort of signed up for one of these courses. I've never been on a flight with a group of them, though.
That would be quite an intense experience. I did feel quite invested actually in our central character's motivation. Like, I was willing her on, that she just wanted to go on a holiday with her boyfriend and his daughter. And it was as simple as that. I mean, I also love the guy that, again, off of the telly, that plays her boyfriend.
Oh, Eamon Elliott. So I recognise him. He looks awful in this film. What is the styling about? Like, all his hair combed forward, the beard and the glasses.
He's like, just meant to look like a kind of dad, isn't he? Just, you know, like a nice, kind dad.
Right, okay.
He's not meant to be a heartthrob.
No, sure. I just thought it was just looked very weird.
Unfair. But I did buy into that motivation, and I did will her on. I was hoping, you know, come on, get there. I thought, you know, maybe their relationship, he was shown as maybe a bit too much of just a gentle dad, and she's like, I'm a businesswoman. And you're like, oh, that's an odd match, but.
Yeah, we don't know what he does.
No.
But he definitely cares about his daughter. He doesn't get much character development, but what we do see makes absolutely no sense to me.
He doesn't get much airtime, you could say.
Ooh, yes. Well done.
Why does it make no sense?
The bit that doesn't make any sense for me is obviously she gets to the point where she's about to get on the flight and then can't face it and runs away again. Don't know if there was really black smoke coming out of the plane or not, but she gets this big, terrible spiel from Charles, who's the flight manager, whatever you want to call him, the instructor, the course instructor, and he goes through his weird sexual story to try and help her calm down, which I didn't find funny at the start or at this point. And then obviously the partner and the daughter walk right past and he just walks off. He doesn't question it, but he doesn't, I don't know. He just, it's almost like he wanted to believe that she was cheating. Because wouldn't you turn around and say, what are you doing?
Yeah, why are you in the airport like all these hours earlier than you said you were going to be?
Yeah, let her explain.
If you're going to have an affair, the airport lounge isn't a great location for it, is it really?
Not really.
Yeah, I think a lot of stuff was not thought out in the most detailed, naturalistic way.
It was something needs to happen to get someone somewhere. Yeah. And that's how most of the film worked. Mm. Even, and we won't talk about it yet, but Rob Delaney's character felt so just dropped in. We need to go from this point to this point to this point. And what can we do? It didn't really feel built in. But yes, like you say, Sarah's motivation, getting on holiday, absolutely fair. Not one we've necessarily all experienced, but we all want to go on holiday. And I can't imagine being deprived of that because of my own fears.
Yeah, it's so limiting if you can't fly.
Have you ever had a bad flight experience?
So one time where we had to fly into, I think, Innsbruck, was it, in Austria for skiing?
Yeah, that sounds right.
This isn't a bad experience, but just you have to fly in between two mountains, basically. So you look out when you're coming in, you look out of one side of the window and it's like rock face, and you look out the other side and it's just rock face, and you're like in between.
How far away would you say?
Oh, it's probably miles, isn't it? No, I have to say I don't love flying, but I've just been like, I'm not going to indulge this. As it, not indulge it, but you know, I'm not going to accept that I don't like flying. Uh-huh. I'm just going to do it anyway and I have to deal with it.
Because the outcome outweighs the...
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I was on a flight once though and something came over the tannoy and it was like, loss of pressure in the cabin, loss of pressure in the cabin, loss of pressure in the cabin.
Holy
shit. And everyone was like, fuck, what's happening? And then it stopped and a voice came on saying, hello everyone. Don't panic. We just pressed that by accident. And I was like,
wow.
Great.
That's great. Properly scary. You shouldn't be able to accidentally press that button.
I know. So that's the scariest it's got. Some dicey turbulence, you know. Oh, I flew from Edinburgh to the Isle of Harris.
Yeah.
Last year to see a friend who lived there. And
shout out to Freya.
Woohoo! And that was great because I was terrified about it because the plane was like, had about 20 people on it, probably. It was, small.
One of those tiny little.
They gave
capsules.
You Tunnocks tea cakes on the plane.
Oh, I love like a Tunnocks tea cake.
Or something. And that was minute. And the airport at Harris is so small that they have like a fridge that's like a donation box. If you take flapjacks from the fridge, you just have to put a coin in the donation box. Wow. In the airport.
They don't have any staff.
Part of the little museum there.
The flapjack fridge is part of a museum?
Yeah, like the airport is one like shed, basically. Okay. That the security, you just have to like walk through a metal detector. I think it's only internal flights.
Yeah, it must be. You're not flying one of those tiny little...
No. It's honestly like a shed, like with a... like in a supermarket car park kind of thing.
Wow.
And then, yeah, it has like a little kind of museum exhibit and a little honesty box to buy some.
Well, that's very cute.
Flapjacks.
I like it very much. Very different experience.
It's nice.
But I can imagine that will, if the weather's bad, it'll either not fly or you'll be terrified flying.
Yeah. Crikey. How about you?
No, I don't think I've ever had a bad experience turbulence-wise or anything. But I talked about my trip to Iceland last November, but on the flight, there were some incredibly strong winds that meant we took off late. The flights before us had been delayed till after us, and they were still concerned that it might not go.
Mm.
But we took off, and while we're in the air, the captain was like, "We're just keeping an eye on the winds in Iceland because we may not be able to land." So
right.
The flight will take longer than normal because the winds are kind of battering the flight. We couldn't feel them, which was a nice thing, I suppose, but they weren't sure they were going to be able to land. So we were like, great, if we can't land, what happens then? I assume we'll have to turn around and go back home. So it's like a 6-hour flight just to end up where you started. Anyway, halfway through the flight, or maybe 3/4 of the way through the flight, the captain came over the tannoy and we were like, oh shit, he's going to say... Mm. It's done. We're going back. Instead, he said, if you look out the window, you might be able to see the aurora. And then he immediately turned the lights off and the whole plane ran to the one side. And I swear we could feel like it tipped. And we were all just, the whole plane was just like in total awe of this amazing aurora borealis outside. And that's the only time I've seen it, but it was magnificent. It was amazing. And it was such a treat because we were all expecting the worst possible news. Well, not the worst news. We weren't going to crash, but it was such a nice, pleasurable thing to have happened. And then we did land. It was very, very windy. Like, I think the winds were about 20 times what they needed to be usually.
Oh, God.
But yeah, fair play to Iceland and even EasyJet, I guess. They got the plane down.
I mean, the sequence in this where the experience flight, as it's called, goes through turbulence, like that must be pretty rare.
The real flight.
Yeah, where like the flight attendant is like thrown up on the ceiling and like that can't.
The biggest stunt of the film.
They'd have told you to put your seatbelts on before that happened, wouldn't they?
Yeah, but the flight attendant would have been trying to make sure everyone else had got their seatbelts on.
Oh yeah, okay.
I'm sure it happens quickly sometimes.
I would be absolutely in pieces if that happened. Would not be a fan.
Well, yeah. Would you be like a group of...
Having a heart attack, yeah.
Yeah, because Sarah's there just kind of muttering to herself, freaking out. Alphonse is screaming.
Mm.
Coco is being sick. We haven't mentioned Timothy Spall. Timothy Spall, he plays Edward, who's like a crime writer or something. Ex-military, Falklands War vet. He's asleep on drugs. and Charles is freaking out as well.
I mean, he's a rubbish course lead, isn't he?
He's a rubbish course lead and, dare I say it, a rubbish character.
Oh, what, because he's one-dimensional? Did you not feel warmly towards him, though?
No, I just couldn't. I didn't care for him. He kept just saying the most banal stuff like, oh, you can't do that. It's not on the course guidance.
I better check too many times.
Yeah. I just like, you're not bringing anything to this. I much would have preferred Mandy from This Country.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I was like, this is going to be great when she was in it.
Yeah. And then she disappeared.
She'd give you a slap and tell you to get over it, wouldn't she?
Yeah, totally. It would have been a very different film with her in charge. Yeah. Oh, I would have loved to see that, but hey-ho. So who would you have resembled most? Just Sarah?
Probably.
Yeah.
High anxiety, mm-hmm. high functioning anxiety. But I guess maybe Sarah was a bit more fleshed out, but most of the characters, I guess, to touch on your critique there of Charles, and maybe that's a wider thing with the film, is that the characters were kind of all one thing each.
Yes.
Like Charles was just like, oh, got to stick to the rules. I don't know what I'm doing with the rules. And then Edward was like, but this is war. This is outrageous. And then the influencer was just self-involved, take some photos of me. And that Alphonse guy was just beaten down and shy. You know, they didn't have like many more layers than that.
No, agreed. And that's, for me, that was the whole kind of first act was kind of boring, even though it shouldn't have been. It took until they were in Iceland and at this hotel that really doesn't have anything to do with them being scared of flying. Again, it advances the plot to get them wanting to leave Iceland. Fair enough. But it does pick up in the second half. And I think the characters develop a bit more.
See, I thought, interesting, because I thought it went off the boil in the second half.
Oh, interesting.
See, because I think that it was set up as this interesting premise and I was quite intrigued to see where it was going to go. And then we kind of forgot that it was about flying all and we're just running around in an Icelandic hotel for no reason. Also, the plot machinations at that point, I was completely lost. So like somebody wanted to be on this flight and then they didn't want to be on that flight. And then somebody else wanted to go in the morning, but not the night. And
that was
all very muddy.
That was the exact point I was trying to remember before we started recording, because that is really unclear. I think Edward takes charge, finally comes out and is a character when they get to the hotel. I agree that it is just about getting moving the plot onwards, but I think it's a bit more interesting, at least funny. But Edward, I think, is trying to leave the next morning. Sarah wants to leave in the evening. Charles is being just taken by whoever wants to take him. So that was kind of unclear. But I just felt like it had a bit more momentum when we were there. I don't think it was necessarily treading water. Or if it was, there was at least stuff going on. Everyone had something a bit more exciting to do rather than just the standard, I'm on a flight, I'm scared.
The standard.
You know.
Well, the second half set in this Icelandic wellness retreat does bring me to my second major what the fucks of this film. Yeah. One, why does he have that bald monk hair? Number two, I won't let it go. Number two, as if an airline would pay for you to stay in that hotel. Like, you'd just get put in the Premier Inn next to the airport, wouldn't you? Not like a prime wellness hotel that has tech billionaires staying at it.
Yeah, you're probably right, actually.
It's outrageous.
It's quite far away. They have to get like a Jeep and drive down.
Not even that, it's far away. It's just so fancy.
Yeah, I feel like they're probably given a good airline who may or may not be able to afford that. Anyway, that hotel in reality as well, it's Foss Hotel Mývatn, which is 6.5 hours away at the best of times. So
you wouldn't be spending that long there then.
You'd get there and you'd miss your flight. So yeah, a little bit too far. But you are right. It's a very, very nice looking hotel.
It's a bit
hotel.
of a Bond hotel, isn't it?
Yeah, sort of nestled in the mountains.
Yeah.
With a lovely, lovely hot bath.
It looks gorgeous.
Yeah.
Alphonse, in order for meaningful change to occur, we have to take true responsibility for our own actions.
Oh my God, I've got to get out of here.
Sarah, leaving the airport is strictly prohibited. Okay.
If there's a 9-hour delay, shouldn't they provide us with a hotel or something?
No.
No? Yes. You just read the small prints?
I'll check with the office.
But you're right, they get there because Timothy Spall's character wakes up and finally does something. I feel like he was the wrong person for that role. I love, don't get me wrong, I love Timothy Spall, but I just didn't, he didn't feel like a war veteran.
No.
I would rather him have been the most stereotypical war vet, colonel kind of mustachioed, oh, I was in the war.
Who would you have had play that then?
Ooh, let's say Charles Dance.
Okay, actually, that could have been interesting. To be fair, I'd like to see Charles Dance like playing afraid. You know, he only plays like boss or lord or scary man. Yeah, he doesn't play afraid man, does he? Very often.
Certainly not in.
He's the kind of person
comedies.
That gets murdered in Agatha Christie's Dance, and they say everybody hated that guy.
Yeah. Well. You know, he's a talented man. Anyway, it's not him. It's Timothy Spall. And he didn't feel like it. Not that any of the characters really felt lived in, but he just didn't feel like a war vet.
Yeah.
In the way I assume.
He wasn't that convincing, was he?
No. But I did enjoy it when he woke up and started acting a bit more like one. You know, going a bit out of his mind, building traps, using his army skills to take apart the mirror in the bathroom for whatever reason, and helping Sarah abseil down the side of the building.
Right, I was so confused by this point. Why did she have to do that in her bra and pants? It was so cold.
Sophie, my partner, said the exact same thing, yeah. I think because she had to get in the hot water. And if she was wearing her robe, that would have weighed her down. And then when she got out the other side, that would have frozen around her.
So she had to abseil down into the swimming pool, into the hot pool.
Well, that's what she does do.
I think I'd close my eyes.
I feel like she could have just walked out the entrance without the police
seeing
her.
Yeah, I know. So unnecessary.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that don't make sense. And I was quite surprised by a couple, because obviously it's made by Icelanders. So most specifically, when she gets in the taxi, which then crashes, and she walks all the way back to the hotel in just like a t-shirt and trousers. Mm. And she's not hypothermic, doesn't have pneumonia, and is like, other than being a bit bashed up from the
crash.
It's
a comedy, Rob, though.
I know, but
it's a harebrained comedy.
There are things that are nonsensical, and there are things that are just totally untrue. And I didn't believe that one. And I couldn't even embrace it.
You wanted her to freeze to death out there, didn't you?
She should have just got picked up by some other kind of odd local. Because actually, one of my favourite things was her driving with this young lad as the driver. And she's like absolutely terrified because he won't look at the road. And he's saying, oh, I've driven in worse. And, you know, growing up, it was way worse than this. And I would have loved this film to be much more about embracing the differences between those Icelanders who've endured this kind of thing forever and all these outsiders coming in unprepared. And maybe that's an entirely different film. And if someone could make that, I think it would work. But it didn't do that again. And I would have liked to see, because one of my favourite things in this film is an Icelandic actor being amazing. And just another little kind of quirky local driving her back to the hotel, a farm or something, would have been
but that
better
was
than
also just a bit of a kind of dead end of a plot sequence, wasn't it?
Yeah. Because what happens from that?
Nothing.
The police turn up, so she has to abseil in a bra and pants.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Again,
yeah.
None of that is necessary. She could have not got in the taxi. That would have saved us, I don't know, 7 minutes of the film.
Oh, God.
Not abseiled down the outside and run across. That would have saved another minute. I don't know.
I feel like we're being more harsh on this film than it deserves.
Maybe. I think I just had such high expectations.
Yeah.
And this didn't.
I think that's probably it.
It didn't tie together. Like, Under the Tree is just so taut. Everything happens for a reason. It spirals out of control. And this kind of never felt like it had any control to it.
Yeah.
Like nothing was being pulled together. It just felt like, you say, the machinations of we need to go from here to here to here. And there's nothing else
going on.
Really. And that brings me to Rob Delaney.
God, love him.
I mean, I do love him. And he has history with being at an airport and doing some, you know, having sexual things going on. Catastrophe is the thing that came to mind, obviously. But yeah, I mean, his character is this pilot who, in one of the other kind of tiny, funniest scenes, Sarah goes up to hug because they made it through the flight, but he's obviously not their captain. Very funny. Brief. And I thought, if that's all Rob Delaney does in this film, that's fine.
I thought that was going to be all he did.
Did you?
Yeah.
Well, it's not, is it?
No.
Because then he comes up and offers her this proposal.
Propositions.
Ooh, proposition. That's a better word.
Proposal makes it sound like...
He didn't get down on one knee. No.
Somewhat less...
Romantic?
Yes. Let's go with that.
Yeah, he goes and shoves his phone in front of her with a big ass naked picture of himself. Do you think that was his real Willy?
I'm gonna say no. That would be so. That's obviously photoshopped. Can you imagine?
The casting call.
Sorry, can you just go in the bathroom and take the photo for the scene, please?
I feel like Rob Delaney might do that. Yeah, it was the casting call. It was just like, we just need a British comedy actor who's happy to be naked.
Yeah, he is kind of just plopped in, isn't he, when needed.
He's literally there so that Sarah has a way out of Iceland. Because the hotel exists, the hotel experience, and I guess this goes for the crash and stuff, all of that experience is the motivating factor for them to want to get the fuck out of Iceland. This isn't doing anything for Iceland's tourist board.
To be fair, did make me think, ooh, look at that wellness retreat. That'd be quite nice, going there. Frozen pools.
All right, well, that part of it is good. But their experience of it, not selling it.
I was actually just thinking, you know, like, oh, I could try and get a flight that I book a flight in really bad weather that I know is going to be delayed, so I get put up in that fancy hotel for free.
Well, good luck with that, because I can tell you now, EasyJet isn't putting you up there. Maybe Iceland Air. I've never flown with them. And apparently, so I've been told, Iceland Air have Icelandic films on their flights that you can watch on the way there and back, including, in the past anyway, Wild Game, A Letter from Helga, and I think Kuldi, which is this new film, Cold, by the director of Rift, which hasn't yet got a UK release, but I'm holding on all the hope for.
We've gone off track now, were we?
We were just saying how, you know, most of the stuff in this film exists so that the film exists, which is a stupid thing to say, isn't it? Because it's a fucking film. But yeah, so Rob Delaney's pilot, he comes back because now he's shown Sarah his cock. She has a reason to blackmail him into giving her a lift out of this country.
Hi.
Oh, hey, hi.
Where are you going?
Right now? Frankfurt.
So your flight hasn't been cancelled?
No, we fly cargo, so it's a little different for us.
Great, so you can give us a lift?
No, I mean, that's not really...
Is that for your wife?
Look, I totally misread the situation, and I'm really sorry, but what you're asking for is impossible.
Well, I wonder what your company's policy is on sexual harassment.
Look, I mean, with weather like this, it could get very rough.
No, Sarah, sorry. This is in complete contravention of the course's regulations.
Yeah, I couldn't care less, Charles, right? Do what you want. I'm going.
Look, I have to warn you, okay? This is not ideal weather for flying, and it's cargo, so there's not going to be any face towels or any complimentary drinks or any of that.
I'm going.
I'm on board.
Oh, no, guys, this is not safe at all. Listen, look, I'm going to just call the office.
That lift is in possibly the worst possible kind of flight you could imagine.
A cargo flight.
A cargo flight where her, Charles and Edward are the only three things on board. It looked...
Bleak,
yeah. And probably terrifying.
Although, if you are afraid of flying, there's no windows on there. Mm-hmm. So you could maybe pretend a bit more. And you could also just freak out because there's nobody else there to disturb.
I'm not sure they were worried about the other people when they're freaking out at the start. But I guess by them overcoming what could possibly be the scariest flight of their lives, they're basically, by the end of the film,
they're cured.
They're cured. Not because of Charles, In fact, like, they're lucky.
In spite of Charles.
Yes. But yeah, they make it out.
Do you think that works? It's a bit like exposure therapy, isn't it? Of like, do you remember Don't Try This at Home?
Yes, where... one of my favourite jokes ever comes from that, and I'll what tell you it? That in a minute.
Okay, where they put you in like a, you were like, I'm afraid of tarantulas. There was a famous one where somebody was afraid of oranges, and they put you like in a glass box with all those things, and they're like, good luck. So do you think if you went on like a horrifying flight that like, was horribly turbulent or cargo hold horribleness, but you survived it, you'd be like, cool.
I'm not sure about
or
that.
You'd just be scarred
I
forever.
Think it's more likely to scar you. The reason they are able to deal with it is because that was a better option than being in this horrific just maelstrom of bizarre shit that was Foss Hotel or just Iceland in general. Yeah, because they don't come out of the other side wanting to get back on a flight other than to get home or get to Cabo Verde, which is where Sarah's heading to, isn't it?
Where is that?
It's like a group of islands off of the west coast of Africa. I'm probably wrong. Wrong side, probably. Off the coast of Africa. But to go back to Don't Try This at Home, which was amazing. It was Davina McCall, wasn't it? Saturday night. But they always had this guy called Paul Hendy who would do these things that what Stephen Mulhern would do now, where he'd go out on the street and talk to people. And he was once like offering people a plate of like little bites of something. It was probably like a thing of
bugs.
Yeah. And he turned to one guy and he said, are you peckish? Offering the food. And the guy turned around and he said, no, I'm Turkish. And that has stuck with me for over 20 years.
You're the only person that ever
I found the clip on YouTube. Oh my God. I can't believe someone else found it. But yeah, brilliant. What a show. What a show. Saturday Night Takeaway's got nothing on that.
How are you?
All right, thank
you. Are you peckish?
No, I'm Turkish.
Now, I realise we've made it to the end of the film here, but we haven't talked about Dries.
Yes.
Tech entrepreneur, billionaire. Mm-hmm. Played by none other than Bjørn Hlynur Haraldsson. Just like, you know, tearing the scenery.
Hamming it up.
Oh, man.
But also, just a side note, imagine if you're a tech billionaire and you've paid for this holiday and you're sharing a sauna with the plebs whose flight's delayed. This is what I mean.
Yeah, no. I don't know. Why is he in the same place as these other people?
But quite a kind of classic, again, stereotype of a tech billionaire.
Is it? Because he's not like Mark Zuckerberg and he's not like Jeff Bezos.
I think he's a bit of an Elon Musk, isn't he?
Do you? I would have put him far, far more normal than Elon Musk. Approachable. He was weird. He was like some kind of bizarre Will Ferrell character or something.
Yeah.
But he was friendly and helpful. I can't even imagine any of the people I just named getting in that in the sauna.
A strange little interlude, wasn't it, with him?
It was, but it was probably my favourite thing in the
really?
Film.
Really? It's probably my least favourite.
What? Well,
I was just like, oh, God's sake. He's so hammy and then just also... I know what you mean when you say it's like a kind of weird Will Ferrell character. It felt quite old-fashioned.
Old-fashioned?
I can't explain myself. Like this kind of strange comedy character that's just like... trying to seduce people.
Yeah, I mean, he felt more of like a created character than the rest of the cast, who I guess was supposed to sort of reflect us more. But I don't know, he just brought some liveliness to it and some weirdness, and I loved his accent. Pilates.
Well, maybe that...
Pilates. I don't remember how he said it now, but it was funny at the time.
Well, maybe that's part of the issue with this film, because... it's kind of funny in trying to do characters, but like we kind of said at the start, maybe it would have landed better if the characters had been more out there, more outrageous, more of everything.
I think that's right. I think if they'd all been notched up a level to more like Dries, it would have been a more fun experience, I think. But on the Dries note, like, I love the performance. And I enjoyed kind of where it went. It was like so, it was unexpected and it was weird. But, you know, when he gets in the sauna and Coco is there looking, you know, lovely. and doing her Pilates. Mm. From that moment on, I knew exactly where that storyline was going. Did it click with you? Because I was like, oh, she's hot, but he's not going to be interested in that.
No, to be fair, I wasn't as on it as you were there.
Okay, interesting. Maybe I've just seen that happen too many times to be fooled. He basically goes for Alphonse instead. And yeah, we get to hear that song Nasty Boy again, which was in Heartstone. How does it go? Okay. I'll play a clip.
Mind if I dance?
I'm a nasty little boy. I'm a little nasty. I'm a nasty little boy. I'm a little useless. I'm a useless little toy. I'm a little useless. I'm a useless little toy. Ow!
Thank you. Cheers, my brother.
It's all very odd, and basically it's just to get to the point where Coco and Alphonse overcomes his fear of flying because of he's like had a revelation.
Yeah.
There's a load of puns to do with flying in what Dries tells him, like spreading your wings and flying or whatever. And then they decide they're going to go heli skiing. Or something.
So it was just basically a way to kind of write off some extra characters. So we're just down to our core.
Yeah. And I feel like, you know, obviously films are made up of narrative and strands for different characters and stuff. But it just all felt far too obvious in this film, I think. It felt like everything was happening for an obvious reason. It didn't feel like I wasn't being swept away with what was going on. I was just like, oh yeah, that's going there. That's going to go there. And eventually there.
What did you think of the ending? So we see Sarah basically landing in Cape Verde, arriving to meet her boyfriend and his daughter, but we don't get to see that reunion, which is potentially going to be an awkward one, but is kind of ostensibly a happy ending. And I was waiting for some kind of sting in the tail or some kind of little final quip. I was literally like, oh my God, is like a plane going to crash into her when she's just like on the ground or something? Because that would have been like,
whoa,
quite a good, I should have written this film.
Yeah.
Quite a good kind of, she was afraid of flying planes in the air, but one killed her on the ground.
Well, killed her partner and her daughter.
Maybe that would have been too dark.
Is that too dark? It would have certainly been unexpected.
But it just felt a bit like, okay, so now she has got there at the end.
Yeah.
Well, there wasn't a final little joke or anything, no, was there?
It didn't need that scene because it didn't go anywhere, like you say. I would have been happy if it had ended on them in the back of the cargo plane, because instead we just find out she did make it. And like, I kind of would have got that from her leaving on that plane.
Yeah.
And do I really care whether the partner and the daughter are excited to see her? I don't know. And I wasn't bothered when I didn't find out. So I feel like that last 5 minutes was totally unnecessary, to be honest. Like you say, if it had any sting, if there was any dialogue or any action, it was just her, like, for a whole minute, just walking. I don't know, like, we just said Cabo Verde's in Africa. It looked more like Italy to me.
Yeah,
same. I don't know, it just felt odd and unnecessary. And it would have made the film 2 minutes shorter.
You can't just be trimming down the runtime everywhere.
I can. Give me an 80-minute taut comedy. I'm happy. Mm. Not that this is long. It's only like an hour 35.
Yeah.
So that's obviously a really good thing about this film. And I know I've been a bit, I have been quite harsh, I'll admit it. But like, I've watched it twice and it's very watchable. Mm. It's just not what I thought it was going to be. And what I think Hafstein Gunnar Sigurdsson is capable of.
It's almost like, you know, if a child at school usually gets, or like you think they should get an A star and they get a B.
Yeah.
It's almost worse than if you know that a films we may have covered on this podcast shall remain nameless. If you know it's going to be a D or an E and it is, then you're like, fair.
yeah, I can deal with that. I'm ready for it. But it kind of makes sense now looking back on how this film kind of got unceremoniously dropped on Netflix. There was no press, there was no PR, there was nothing could kind of advertise that this film was there. It just kind of appeared. And like, it was exciting to see it had appeared, but there's usually a reason why something hasn't got a marketing budget or what have you. At least Driving Mum, which we reviewed 2 weeks ago, had a bit of a budget. I've seen trailers, I've seen posters, I've seen all sorts of things, and it's been at the cinema doing quite well, I think. This one, yeah, I guess they didn't believe in it necessarily. Certainly not as good as the other Icelandic film that's on Netflix, which is And Breathe Normally, which we did back in the day. But, you know, it's all right, isn't it?
Pass a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, I'm trying to desperately to think of a flying pun.
Would you want to watch this on a plane?
Oh. I don't think it would bother me. If I hadn't seen it and it was on there, I would watch it. As it stands, I have now seen it twice and I'd rather watch Cooldy or something. How about you?
I would not mess around with watching films about flying and plane crashes and the fear of flying on a flight, you know.
No?
It's not worth invoking the karma.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm sure I've seen a plane crash on a plane before, but maybe they don't put that kind of stuff on the plane.
Probably not. They probably don't have United 93, do they?
That would be a poor choice. I'll tell you what they did have on my trip to America last year. A film called Io, which is about a donkey. It just follows a donkey in like Europe escaping from the circus.
That sounds terrible.
And going on adventures.
I once on a plane, having never seen Casablanca, watched Casablanca on a plane.
And talking about that
as
yesterday.
We were landing, the final scene with the plane.
Try not to spoil it.
Yeah.
It's only 100 years old.
Basically with the famous lines in.
Yeah.
And also on a plane, I didn't have time to finish it.
No.
And I've never seen the last like 5 minutes of Casablanca.
Oh, that's gutting.
Because I was like, I'm not going to go home, find Casablanca, rent it and watch the last 5 minutes.
No, I guess not. Well, it's not that long though, I learned. I thought it was one of these sprawling 3.5 hour epics, but it's like 85, 90 minutes or something.
One day.
That's amazing.
One day I will watch the end of it.
I think you should. Maybe when I decide to finally watch it, I'll get you round.
Exactly. We'll watch it together.
It's not Icelandic though, so maybe we should just leave it. Well, it may be no Casablanca or Under the Tree, but Northern Comfort is a fun enough watch for what it is, and certainly worth checking out for Bjørn Hlynur Haraldsson's performance as Dries. It's a cracker. Let us know what you thought of the film, and send us any of your own exciting aeroplane stories on the socials. And we'll be back next week for one final episode of the series, where we'll be covering Baltasar Kormákur's The Oath, which is available to rent or buy on Apple TV. See you then. Tack. God bless. Thanks and goodbye.